Well, folks, welcome to another episode of the Noble Man Podcast. This is Mike Young here. I'm your host. I'm with my good friend Drew Hamm. He is a professor of discipleship at Southeastern Seminary. And we are going to have a conversation right now about what exactly is discipleship. How do you define it? And it's one of those things that's kind of nebulous. So, Drew, kick us off. Welcome to the program again. This is not your first time with us, but we're glad to have you back.
Thanks, my friend.
And start us off. How do you define discipleship when you're teaching? And this is co-ed. You teach in broad context what is discipleship, biblical discipleship. So get us going on this and how you lead your class.
Yeah, so one of the things that I say about discipleship, Mike, when I teach is if you read 50 books on discipleship, you're going to get 50 different definitions.
Right.
So as we mentioned earlier, you have to define your terms.
Sure.
What do you mean? And so we throw this word around a lot, mentoring, discipleship.
Right.
They're synonymous. And some people, no, those are not the same things. They're two very different. Okay, well, then what do you mean?
Right.
So I'm just going to keep it really simple.
You
know,
I love
this
it.
Whole KISS principle idea. Yeah. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
Let's just break it up. Discipleship. I define it as disciplined worship.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is if you go back to Genesis 1 and 2, God
sure.
created man and woman in his image. Why? Because he wanted a relationship with us.
Sure.
So again, Genesis 1 and 2. What did Adam and Eve do in the garden? God put them in, and he very specifically gives Adam this command to work and to keep the garden. Well, those words, the Hebrew words, abad and shamar, also mean worship and obey. So if you go over to when Moses goes to Pharaoh and he says, let my people go so that we can abad and shamar, worship and obey
okay.
our God. Okay, so the same words. Adam's put in the garden to worship and obey.
Yeah.
It's really important. So then you have Genesis 3. All of this gets muddied. We
right.
sin against the Lord. And yet our responsibility is still to worship and obey. We were created to worship. So discipleship is really rightly orienting our worship to the Almighty God.
Right.
1 Corinthians 10:31, whatever you do, whether you eat or drink, do it all to the glory of God. Colossians 3:17 says something very similar. So I would suggest that all of life is worship.
Yeah.
So how do we have a podcast that is an act of worship before the Lord? How do we drink a cup of coffee as an act of worship before the Lord? How do I drive my car as an act of worship?
Well, you're getting some dangerous territory there with all these bad drivers around here. That's
you sure you want to go down that road with me?
No,
yes.
I don't.
I use the word road intentionally. Yeah. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Discipleship is disciplined worship. And so how do we rightly orient all of life to be an act of worship before the Lord?
Okay. So when I'm thinking of this, the question, what is discipleship? And, you know, so I hear people say that true discipleship requires that we meet together for 12 weeks or 12 months, and we go through this book, and we do this particular thing. And so it is very formulaic. And there are other people that say discipleship is very broad, and it can be all over the place. And so is it A or B or C or D, all of the above? How do you unravel that question?
Yeah, and it's a great one. And I agree with you 100%. Some people are very structured and
right.
systematic in their understanding of discipleship and how they want that to function. And other people are very organic. And,
right.
But I would just say discipleship should be, in an ideal world, life on life.
Right.
It's, you know, Mike, if I was going to ask you to disciple me, I want to be a part of your life.
Right.
I want to see how do you love your bride?
Right.
How do you raise your kids?
Sure.
How do you treat your grandkids? How do you serve your local church?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a, quite frankly, it's a dangerous question when someone asks me, hey, will you disciple me?
Ooh. Yeah, because it feels intrusive and I'm exposed.
There it is.
Yeah.
All of my fault. If I genuinely let you into my life,
right.
your am I willing for you to see the good, the bad, the ugly? Because in a podcast, in a short conversation, I can put up a really good face.
Right.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at that. But now I'm going to have to show you the underbelly, and that's not so pretty.
All right, so now we're getting into some places where I think it's going to get really fun, because is that one of the reasons that we don't see discipleship happening well in the local church? Because the exposure that sort of invitation requires, it frightens me. Or that's could be so. I've made so many mistakes. I do so many things incorrectly. I am so imperfect that I can't allow you to see all of those parts of my life that I have worked so hard to hide for all these years. So no, I'm not interested in discipling anyone. I think that's the thought that's going through the minds of some folks in local churches, especially men. Would you concur with that, or what are your thoughts? Is that one of the stumbling points for us?
Yeah, I agree. It's a stumbling point.
Okay.
My hesitation there, Mike, is I think for us as men in particular, we're very good at rationalizing what we do and why we do it. And that's just kind of a that's a very general statement.
Sure.
But here's what I mean. So I know a little bit about your life. You know a little bit about mine. And I got a full-time job.
Right.
And for me, the convenient thing for me is my life is also a ministry.
Yeah.
And I have the opportunity to teach classes on top of that. And I'll get asked to do different things. Look, but outside of my vocation, my calling, I'm also a husband.
Right.
And that takes priority. And I got four kids.
Right.
And as we've talked about, that window of time with my kids who are ages 18 to 10, I remember when my oldest was 10. Man, he's 10.
Yeah.
And he's half of my time with him before he moves out, goes to college, goes into the workforce, and it's gone already.
Yeah.
Right. So my window of time with my kids is closing. So that's where I want to really invest
right.
the bulk of my time. And look, let's be honest, they're already seeing the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Right.
They get it 24 hours a day, but that's my primary target. And so now you've got because of my context, teaching in a graduate school, in a college, yeah, there are a lot of younger guys. I just don't have the margin
right.
to disciple all the people that have come and asked. So it's, you see here I'm rationalizing where,
sure.
oh, I don't have time. It's not really about the underbelly that I referenced earlier. It's about where am I going to put the limited amount of time that I have?
Right. Your time is a limited resource. And that's true of many of us. I would say that's not true of all of us.
Oh, 100%.
And one of the things that I find frustrating is, and I'm willing to accept that from you. And if you are truly discipling your kids and making strategic, intentional, spiritual investments in them so that they experience disciplined worship, you are discipling them, then that's a huge win. I'm all about that.
Mm-hmm.
But for the guy who has a lot of margin and who is not willing to go and eat a breakfast sandwich or a biscuit with another guy because he says, I'm too busy, I've got all this other. I think there's an untapped army of men in the local church. They're untrained, undeployed, and they need to be investing in the lives of other men. And so somehow we've got to cast vision for them to be involved in this process. And I like your disciplined worship. We've got to help them become involved in the process of teaching disciplined worship to another generation of men who could benefit and be blessed by their wisdom.
And I agree 100%. But I want to go back to what you just said. I think there's a whole pocket of guys
yeah.
who are not yet deployed.
Yeah.
But I'm going to I'm going to circle down even to my own life. Like, I just made this excuse as to where I don't have time. I think there's a large pocket of time that I could make disciples if I wanted to. And here's my one. So Matthew 28, 19, and 20, many of us are familiar with that. Go make disciples.
Yeah.
Baptize them.
Yeah.
We're called to make disciples of all nations. It doesn't say go make disciples of your family. While that's a priority, we're supposed to go make disciples of all nations.
Yeah.
So, look, man, it's about priorities. Like, if I want to go hunting this week, I bet you I can find a couple hours to go do that.
Yeah.
So is making disciples a priority?
I love this because you just gave an excuse of I've got to spend so much time with your family. I gave you a little bit of slide room on that. And then you came back and you said, well, I should not have that slide room. I should be held accountable to evaluating my priorities. And that's pretty fun for you to just kind of hold yourself accountable in that whole thing. And that's what we all should do, isn't it? Don't we need to evaluate where we are and what we're doing, and what are we doing that is valuable, not just for the right now, but for eternity?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mike, in asking the question, I'm reminded of it's an equation that, look, I'm stealing it from another friend.
Yeah.
But the equation is simply this, and it goes directly to your point. You have a stated belief, and you need to compare that against your actual practice.
Right.
And that will tell me what you actually believe. So the way that I would write that as a mathematical formula across the board is a state of belief is A plus your actual practice would be B, and then you draw a line under that. And that tells me what your actual belief is, C.
Right.
So let me walk through that. My state of belief is that I believe that prayer is important.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay, so now B, what's your actual practice? So I actually pray, let's be honest, I'm being hypothetical here, but so yesterday, let's go back, super busy morning, got busy at work, went home, had dinner with my family. Yeah, so we prayed before dinner as a family. So, I called on one of my kids to pray for dinner. What was that, all of 45 seconds, maybe? Everybody showers, goes to bed. My wife and I have a short conversation. We're exhausted. We fall asleep at 11 o'clock. Yeah, so the sum total of my prayer life was 45 seconds out of the mouth of one of my kids. So what's your actual belief, C? Well, if that's the sum total, if your actual practice is 45 seconds, then do you really believe in the power of prayer?
Right.
No, I don't think you do.
Not so much.
So again, if my state of belief is that I believe the Bible is God's inerrant word, it's the most important book in the history of the world, that it's God's recorded message to us, but my actual practice is, on Sunday morning, I got to find my Bible. But the problem is, I got to remember where I left this last Sunday after church. What do you actually believe about the Bible?
Right.
Like, you don't even read the thing.
Right.
Unless it's Sunday morning at a church service. And so what do we actually believe? If I say that I'm a Christian, if my stated belief is that I am a Christian, but I don't act like it, that should cause us to really evaluate what's going on in our life. And so if God's given us this command to make disciples, but I'm not making disciples, that should be a problem.
So how do you meet guys there and invite them into that vision and encourage them to step into that? Because that's, you know, part of our audience is listening to this.
Sure.
And they're thinking, where do I start?
Yep.
You teach discipleship. So where does someone who feels the tension of what you just said and says, okay, I am practically not, I'm not doing this as in terms of my actual engagement.
Right. So, Mike, what's fascinating to me is I have a number of guys that I talk to, and let's be honest, we're on a podcast talking to men about man stuff.
Yeah.
One of the things that is crippling our generation is pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And we, additionally, though, if we're going to be honest about this, it's crippling women as well.
Sure.
But one of the questions that I like to ask guys who are struggling with porn is, who are you? Mm. And so a lot of times with my demographic, I will look at a guy across the table and I will say to him, and this is usually a college age guy, and most of them tend to be single. And what I will ask them is, in 10 seconds or less, tell me, who is your name? Who is Mike Young? And this is the answer I typically get, Mike. The clock starts now. And there's silence.
Mm-hmm.
And I will hold up my hand and count down from 5, 4. And then they'll finally say, that's a really good question. I don't know. Oh, well, you just helped answer the problem.
Yeah.
Because if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
Yeah. If you don't know who you are.
Who are you? And so one of my favorite scenes in all of cinema is when the emperor comes to visit Marcus Aurelius in Gladiator. And he confronts him and says, who are you? Turn around and show me your face. And he explains who he is. I'm Marcus Decimus Aurelius, the husband of a murdered wife, the father of a murdered son. And he goes on to explain who he is. It's a man who knows who he is.
Yeah.
Well, look, if my identity is I am a Christian, and the literal definition of Christian is little Christ.
Little Christ, yeah.
Then shouldn't I look like Christ? I mean, that's how the early church got their nickname of Christian, because mm-hmm. they looked like Jesus Christ. So how do I start walking that way? Man, Mike, you're a little older than me. That's where I look at an older brother and I go, okay, I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
Help me.
Yeah.
And so you grab a guy by the hand. I mean, we've been talking about our sons. I grab my boy by the hand and I say, this is how we do it.
Yeah.
This is how men behave. So we're going to get up in the morning. We're going to read our Bible. We're going to pray before meals. We're going to thank the Lord. We're going to protect those who can't protect themselves, but it's where we need each other as a church.
Yeah.
The church is Jesus's avenue into the kingdom. And so it's a beautiful thing.
It is. And that's why Noble Warriors continues to champion the local church. I mean, I believe God has in some way commissioned Noble Warriors to help the church mobilize men to be more active in this discipline of worship as they disciple other men. And it can start in the home with their family, but it has to get bigger than that, and they have to go out and pour their lives into other men and grow the kingdom in that way. But I don't want Noble Warriors to be the center of that. I want the local church to be the center of that. And so if you're listening to this and you're part of a local church, you're on a leadership team in a local church, part of what I'm hoping that you're thinking about and asking yourself is not only what should I do about this as an individual, how do I respond as an individual, but what role can I play in helping our church develop a DNA that is about disciple making and building the kingdom by not, you know, I love evangelism, but my challenge sometimes with evangelistic fervor is I want to know, what are you going to do once the person says yes to Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
That challenges me
mm-hmm.
because I think we count a lot of noses and we don't count lives transformed. We love to give account for someone who says yes to Jesus and is baptized, and I in no way want to diminish that holy moment when someone submits to Christ and says, begin the process of changing in me, but there is something that must come after that. And that is the part of disciple making and the helping someone grow in maturity. That is, I mean, we get the justification, but we've got to move forward into the sanctification process and not forget that in the local church. And it troubles me that I sense that we do that sometimes.
I don't know if you're aware of this story. You and I have never had this conversation, but Billy Graham became convicted that his crusades were so successful, but yet when he left town, what was happening to the people who just said yes to Jesus?
Yeah.
So do you know what he did?
No.
So he reached out to Dawson Trotman.
And
not a lot of people know the name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but they know Dawson's. The Navigators.
Yeah.
So Billy Graham becomes really close with Dawson Trotman and says, look, I have to have help in connecting these people to the local church.
Yes.
And so Billy Graham's entire ministry changed at that point. And he worked very directly with Dawson Trotman, and they became very close because Billy Graham said, I will not come and do a crusade unless there are local churches who are involved, who are willing to follow up with these people who say yes to Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And it was a magnificent transformation of his ministry because he said, I'm not going to ask people to pray a prayer and think their life has been changed when there's no grounding in that.
Yeah.
The Great Commission is not go and get people to pray a prayer.
Right.
It's go and make disciples.
That's right.
And part of the conversation that you and I have had is, but wait, are our churches making disciples?
Right.
I think it's a really serious question.
It is.
That we have to ask. Just because your church is pretty, just because a lot of people show up, does not mean you're making disciples.
That's right. And so we have to wrestle with definitions and what all of that looks like, but are you teaching people, according to Drew Hamm's definition that he uses here, disciplined worship? Are you worshiping Christ in every measure of your day, every environment, part of your day? And how do you learn that? You learn that by watching someone else who's helping you figure out what does the life of the believer look like as he becomes more like Christ. And so, man, there is so much work to do. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you mentioned the whole Billy Graham thing and the Crusades, because the Noble Warriors Conferences, which, folks, if you're listening to this, you can, by the time this podcast goes up, you can probably check out the conference schedule for next year. And our whole strategy with those conferences is not to see individual men come, but to see groups of men come from the local church, so that I don't want anyone to come and not already have some sort of strategy to connect with the local church as a result of being at that event. So be on the lookout for those things. There's so much to learn here, so much to process together. Guys, we want to be about disciple making. We're going to talk about this more and more. There's some great resources that Drew uses in his class that that we may be able to unpack. For example, a book that I read because I had to read it after I found out about it from his class is The Trellis and the Vine. And so if I could recommend a resource to you that you could go and read about something that would help you get your mind around, hey, what should discipleship look like in the local church? Drew, why don't you just give us an overview of the big idea behind the book, The Trellis and the Vine, and what someone could learn as they would use that to help them catalyze some change in their local church?
Yeah, it's actually a fun story, and I'll probably take the answer in a different direction than the question you just asked, Mike. But I read The Trellis and the Vine for a class I was taking, I don't remember, 10, 15 years ago. It's fascinating. And the idea, if you're familiar with a trellis and a vine, you have the structure, which is the trellis. And when it comes to the church, that can be anything from a building to a program.
Right.
Awana is a trellis.
Sure.
Your church staff is even a trellis.
Sure.
But the vine is the people.
Right.
And you go to John. Jesus talks about the vine, and we have to be in him. The problem, the difficulty comes for churches as they get bigger, the focus becomes more and more on the trellis or trellises than it does the vine. And the whole point is, okay, but you have to have a balance. Don't ignore, if you completely ignore the vine and you only focus on the trellis, that's problematic. But if you completely ignore the trellis, how's the vine going to grow?
I mean,
you put a vine on the ground, it doesn't grow. It doesn't do what it's supposed to do.
Right.
So there has to be a really healthy balance there. Okay, got it. So the authors of this book, they're out of Australia, and they explained that they hey, we figured maybe 300 people, 300 pastors were going to read this book and go, oh, yeah, that's great. But that book blew up.
Yeah.
And then these pastors are calling these authors going, hey, awesome, love it. What do I do now?
Sure.
So they wrote part two, The Vine Project. Mm-hmm. And it's really a practical guide on how to walk your church through this conversation. And the language they use is moving people to the right from new believer into an engaged believer into somebody who can equip. And it's all using ease alliteration.
Right.
But really, how do we grow people
right.
to make not only to – it's really from the infancy stage
sure.
to – adulthood.
Right.
But at the same time, understanding adulthood and multiplication. So
right.
how do we then equip them to go back and make disciples?
Right.
So that it's a process that fulfills the Great Commission.
Yeah, because we ultimately, in most churches, we're thinking in terms of what are our numbers? How many are coming to worship? And we live with addition. Sadly, I think in the local church, we're satisfied with addition
yeah.
when we should be focused on multiplication mm-hmm. and seeing disciples go and make other disciples.
Oh, that's so, super helpful, though, Mike. But you and I speak a very similar language. So
right.
for the audience that doesn't addition, multiplication, who cares,
yeah.
you're adding. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, what I mean by that is, you know, if we see a few people come and they visit the church and maybe a few out of them join and you see the congregation growing and they're being fed only by what happens on Sunday morning and they are not learning to, they're not growing in their own faith so that they are gaining maturity and reaching the point then when they become reproducers so that we're not relying on the large Sunday morning gathering for the growth of the kingdom. We are seeing people who are going out and investing in other folks and they become the church out in the community and we take the gospel out into the community and it's not always about who we can get in the building, it's how we can expand the gospel out beyond the edges of what we would consider the church gathering. And so it's the expansion, it's the multiplication, it's the growth of the kingdom that takes off. And that's very different from how many people were in your church on Sunday morning. Very different. And so how do we measure those things and how do we grow people and train them and equip them and encourage them and cheer for them as they go out and multiply the kingdom in that way.
Yes.
Is that helpful?
100%. Yeah, so there's an anecdote that I use here at Southeastern. Let's hypothetically say that you are a phenomenal evangelist.
Okay.
You're reaching 1,000 people a day.
Yeah.
You come in contact with 1,000 people a day who accept Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Okay. How long would it take for you to reach the world with the gospel?
Yeah. Well, there's 8 billion people in the world, so
right.
a long time.
Right. Okay, so, and the way I begin the conversation here is, has the Great Commission been fulfilled? And the answer is no.
Right.
We haven't taken the gospel to the ends of the earth. Not by any means. Okay, why not? Why would God give us an expectation, a command, a commission that's unfulfillable? Well, he wouldn't. So what are we doing? Well, being a successful evangelist, adding 1,000 people to the church, Big C church, that's not going to get the job done.
Right.
However, let's change this equation from addition to, okay, so let's say you, Mike, disciple 3 guys. You've got 3 sons. You disciple them well. And so you get, all right, guys, I've discipled you for a year. Now you need to go and disciple 3 other guys. Each of you are discipling 3 more,
mm-hmm.
who then, after a year, disciple 3 more, who then after a... Okay, so you can see where we're going. We just went from 3 to 9, from
right.
9 to 27. There's now exponential... How long would it take to reach the world if 3 people...
I can't remember the answer to this question.
27 years.
27 years for the fulfillment of the Great Commission.
This isn't addition we're talking about. We're talking
yeah.
about multiplication.
Yeah.
So we have to be about making disciples.
Who from make disciples.
Yes.
Yes.
Go make disciples. The definition, a disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ is by definition a disciple maker.
Yeah.
We, as a church, are not there.
That's right.
So here's something fascinating to me. Got four kids. Again, I told you they're ages 18 through to 10. My daughter right now is involved in a discipleship relationship with other girls her age, but a leader. And so my daughter goes to Bible study on Friday afternoon with this leader. They just got back from camp this summer. The leader came to my daughter and said, hey, the girl that accepted Jesus Christ at camp, I'd like you to start discipling her.
That's right.
And my daughter's 14 years old, and I'm going, wait a second. But she has a mentor who is helping her in this process.
That's right.
Okay, so probably not the time to get into this whole conversation, but it's really interesting that somebody did that with my daughter, but nobody's done that with my sons.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're making disciples.
Yeah.
And that's the point.
Absolutely. And boy, we will have to dig into this deeper because living the same life with my daughter, she had some older girls that invested in her. And now when she's home, she very intentionally and strategically, as an 18-year-old young lady, picks out there are actually parents who reach out to her and say, hey, would you do something with my daughter this summer?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so Hannah will often with her own money, take them to Chick-fil-A or somewhere, and she very intentionally chooses a book to walk with them through, and so she is involved in this discipling because it's part of the culture of what we try to do in our family that we build into that.
Yeah.
And man, this it needs to be more prominent in the local church.
Yeah.
So, and especially with men. So folks, we're at the end of this segment. We've got a lot of work to do. There's so much more to unpack, but this is just a hoot and a half. I am so thankful for the opportunity to sit down with Dr. Hamm, and I think this will probably be a regular feature. We'll do this from time to time and pick out some topics that we can chew on for a bit and share with you guys. So thanks so much for joining us for the Noble Man Podcast. We'll check in with you next time. God bless you, folks.